Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Abby Greaves is the author of Anywhere for You. She's also the author of The Silent Treatment. She studied English literature at the University of Cambridge and worked in publishing for 3 years before leaving to focus on writing. She currently lives in the UK. Welcome, Abby. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Anywhere for You.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now you talk.
Happily, I was just admiring the cover of your book, my book rather, because I'm mid-move. So I have no books behind me, but no, I was just admiring it there. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, I'll just keep holding it up so you can see it. Yes, it's a beautiful blue cover with stars and this little sort of train station with the subtitle, How Far Would You Go for the Love of Your Life? Oh, so Abby, why don't you tell listeners what Anywhere for You is about? And also, I want to know why the different title for the UK edition and like how did you pick which one for which area and all that?
Yeah, brilliant question. So first of all, I'll tell you a little bit about Anywhere for You. So it's the story of a woman called Mary O'Connor, and she's 40 years old. She lives in Ealing, which is in London. She works in a supermarket. But what's unusual about her is that every day when she finishes her shift, she walks to the tube or subway station, and there she stands with a sign that says, Come Home, Jim. and no one knows who he is, no one knows where he's gone. That is until the beginning of the book, 7 years on from when Mary last saw Jim, she gets a phone call from a man who she thinks is him, and it sets into motion a whole chain of events where suddenly she needs to come to terms with just what happened when Jim disappeared. So it's a love story really at its heart, but it's a mystery. It's a lot about mental health, which is a subject really close to my heart. And yeah, I loved writing it. In terms of the titles, that's a really good question. The title I chose, or my working title, I suppose is a better way to put it, was actually the UK title for this book, which is The Ends of the Earth. And it doesn't give anything away, really, to say that that's because it's a promise in the book that Mary and her partner, Jim James, make, which I suppose is a promise that we make to many people who we love, which is that you will go to the ends of the earth for them. And in the book, you're seeing Mary come to terms with that promise when Jim is no longer there. Like, what does it mean to have made that promise if it can't be held? So that was the title I had working. But with my US editor, I think she was a little bit worried that The Ends of the Earth sounded a bit sci-fi, of all things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I can see that. Because I think publishers, they like a really clear proposition, don't they? They like clear title, clear strapline, clear cover. So together we came up with everything. It was a long process. We came up with a few things riffing on waiting, because obviously she's waiting there with her sign, but nothing there quite worked. And then we came up with Anywhere For You and it just kind of stuck. So yes, two titles, Anywhere For You in the States, The Ends of the Earth in the UK. Yeah, it's fun and it's different and I don't know. I've grown to love them both, I should say.
It's so neat, this whole, like, you get your own cover and your own title. It's like a focus group experiment in real time with the US and the UK. I feel like every book should try this. Like, not that it dictates the success of the book by any stretch, but just, you know, even which one feels more authentic to you and that you relate to. And anyway, I was debating if I should throw out a few other titles it could have been as well, but maybe I'll stop.
You know, I would happily, this time last year, I was tearing my hair out over this. You know, every day I was sort of, you know, to my mom, to my boyfriend, to my neighbor, oh, any ideas like what I could do with this? So no, I love hearing them. I kind of love hearing alternative titles.
Yeah, we should have chit-chatted. I love like brainstorming. I don't know. I think Waiting For Jim would be interesting, but maybe that's not as interesting. But it doesn't really, of course, capture the whole thing. But anyway, it's a great title. Moving on. So in your novel, first of all, you're struck by the fact that Mary, who is your main, you know, who's your protagonist, is both sort of lost and yet has this regal beauty to her. And yet she's sitting in like the basement of the train station with a sign as if she's, you know, a beggar, like looking for money or something, which of course is not the case. She's just like searching for her love and wondering where he is. And the first thing that's interesting is how people are responding to her, right? So all the people who walk by, the people who try to give her money, the people who try to help, very few people who try to help. And then finally, the woman who decides to like exploit this whole situation for her own sort of gain. It's like the whole gamut of how people respond, right? The selfless, the self-motivated, and it's sort of like a mini commentary on society and the way that they just treat her as she sits there sort of desperately hoping to reunite with someone in this like heartbreaking moment. So tell me a little bit about that and how you thought about that.
Yeah, that actually ties in almost to my inspiration for the whole novel, because I first had the idea when I was commuting in London, and I'm sure like New Yorkers or anyone else who lives in one of the big commuting centers in the world, you're flying through those ticket gates twice a day minimum. And you're right, you see the full spectrum of humanity passing by you commuting, but also just in the station. And that really got me thinking about people who stand out there, the people who go against the flow, which is obviously Mary with her sign. And I think we've all seen it, you know, if there's someone distressed in the station for whatever reason, there is that group of people who run to them. There's the group of people who run away from them. I think the greatest group of people are those who just turn a blind eye. And I think that's what we see in the novel. It's for like 7 years, Mary's behavior has gone not so much unchallenged, it's just kind of ignored, because there are so many people who just kind of sink into themselves, I suppose, instead of dealing with that for whatever reason. And then, as you say, you get this one character who enters a few chapters in, who ends up holding the key to getting to the bottom of what happens, and her name is Alice, and she's a journalist, and that she starts off from a place of self-interest, but I suppose her arc in the book, like Mary's, is to come to a realization of just where that might have come from. But yeah, it's amazing what you can pick up on your commute. Like when I think about this novel, when I hold it in my hands, when I hear from readers, I think, honestly, I had that idea and I go, well, I don't know, a Monday or a Tuesday, flying into the office, probably late. I'll never not think about that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, that commute, you've now completely, can definitely write that off for like taxes or something. I don't know how it works there. And another interesting thing about Mary is that despite the fact that she is sort of in distress from her own loss and, you know, almost grieving for this lost character, she still decides to sort of pass the time by getting a job at, you know, at a helpline overnight and helping other people. And you just mentioned a second ago about your own connection to mental health. So tell me a little bit more about the crisis hotline, why she's drawn to that, and what your own sort of role in this is.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I didn't necessarily, when I first had the idea, as I was just saying then on the commute, it wasn't immediate that I had the idea of her working at a crisis line. But as I began to research missing people, particularly the kind of processes in the UK, which have many, many holes in them. I mean, it's a complete minefield how we go about dealing with missing people. But I kept coming again and again to these crises, to the crisis lines that exist for missing people. Obviously got me thinking more broadly about crisis lines, be it something like the Samaritans, which we have in the UK, suicide lines, lines dedicated to children, the elderly, all of these. And I thought, as I was digging into Mary's character, not only, she was not the sort of person necessarily who would phone one of these lines, but she was the sort of person who would entirely understand the importance of them and want to be involved. As you read in the book as well, you see that there's a slight element of not so much self-interest, but kind of hope and desperation there too. You know, if Jim needs something from her, she can be on the end of the phone. And I really enjoyed writing that part of the book, not only because it helped me to introduce a whole cast of other characters, the sort of people who would be working for a crisis line like that, but as you say, because I just think it's such an important theme in my writing of Anywhere For You, but also in my previous book, The Silent Treatment, and that we all know it, don't we? Mental health affects all of us. We all have one, whether we feel it in that moment or in a particular moment of crisis. So it's something that is always not even beneath the surface of my writing, but I just think it's a really important part of all my characters to show how they are authentically in their minds. So yeah, it's very important. And I think having the book release at this time as well, it's something that readers have really responded to, and I kind of see it as a theme in the messages that come through, you know, saying that it resonated. And yeah, that means a huge amount to me.
I mean, you actually manufactured many ways to include like a ton of characters. I mean, if this is a movie, you'd have quite a casting, you know, you have to hire a whole casting agency, I feel like. You know, even at the grocery store, at like Janet, and you have Ted at the hotline, and you have like there are people, and the people on the, then you can have, you have your great scene on the train where she's like, I can't fucking breathe. And this is like now a whole big thing. And I feel like you should make a hashtag Where's Jim t-shirts. And I don't know, you have like a whole thing going here. Yeah. Have you thought about this becoming, you know, a version on the screen or anything like that?
I think like any author would be lying if they didn't say that, you know, they never have.
I know. Why do I even ask? I shouldn't even ask.
Wild daydream. No, it's definitely true. And it's obviously a challenge when you write a larger cast of characters, because you can't give everyone equal breathing space, or you don't have a main character, but you want everyone to feel like a fully rounded human. So it's obviously lovely to hear that, you know, you can kind of remember all these characters, and I think about them too. You know, I go into my local supermarket and I'm like looking for the Janet there.
Right? Yeah.
And I like that. I think it was with Anywhere For You, why I felt it was important to see this network was because Mary feels very isolated. And has done in those 7 years. She's the sort of person, if you said to her, oh, do you have many friends? She'd be like, oh, none. But actually, what I wanted to show to the reader is that actually, you don't need to kind of force a network down someone's throat. It's just there. If you have a job, you have a network, for better or worse. If, you know, you have a network where you live, you have a network of people that you just come into contact with when you're putting in the bins out, you know? So, yeah, that I suppose was where it came from in terms of casting those kind of subsidiary characters. I, you know, I even have like favorites. I shouldn't really say that, but it's Kit.
It's okay. Wait.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone reads it and feels similarly, let me know. I have had quite a few people say, Kit, bring him back. I don't know, maybe sometime. Yeah, that's kind of the joy of just colouring in the side characters.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
So how did you begin writing fiction? Tell me about your whole like sort of writing journey.
Yeah, a great question. I mean, like so many writers, I was always a reader. It never really struck me that I could or should write though until post-graduation when I ended up working in publishing just, you know, because I love books. I worked in a literary agency. I was an intern. I worked my way up to an assistant. I was agenting a few nonfiction projects. And I suppose just that proximity to a first draft really gives you a sense of it maybe not being quite so unattainable, because the book you pick up with the lovely cover and whatever else, that's been through like umpteen edits. Like, you know, you don't want to think how many rewrites that's gone through. So I suppose that got me thinking it was more possible. It also got me thinking I need a really good idea to, you know, write to kind of sustain me for 80,000 words, to then get the attention of an agent, to get the attention of a publisher. So I suppose I kind of waited for that idea to come along, and fortunately it did. And from that stage, I just started writing it. Early mornings, before work, before the commute. And I was fortunate enough to get an agent and to get a publisher for my first novel, The Silent Treatment. And a little while later, I decided to go freelance. So I just had a little bit more time to work on my writing because it was a very full-on day job. So that's me now, freelance writing. Like everyone, it's a different path, right? But I'm grateful for the steps that brought me here. It was, you know, it was definitely eye-opening working in a kind of entry level in publishing for a while.
And The Silent Treatment came out during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So what was that like as a debut novelist for you? Like, you know.
It was, you know, it came out right at the beginning of the pandemic, at that stage where the supermarkets were empty. I don't know if you had that in the States, but we did. Empty supermarkets, closed shops, kind of sheer panic. So I think, having gone from my debut being at the forefront of my mind for the moment, for, you know, from the moment I really started writing it, and definitely since I got a book deal for it, it kind of then just fell to the back because you're worried for your family. You're worried just to kind of how you're going to get through the next few weeks. So that definitely, like, you know, it was sort of psychologically a little bit odd, but it definitely made me appreciate A, our glorious booksellers who have been heroic, how much we need them, but also just the readers and the different ways you can connect. Because I think while on the one hand we're so connected Zooming during the pandemic, you can also feel really disconnected. So getting an email from a reader who's taken the time to find your details to say, this book resonated with me, or even just to, like, you know, drop you a DM on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, to take the time to share it with their book group, to take time to share it with their neighbor. That, I think, means more to me than, you know, it could have done outside of this climate. So I suppose that's a long way of saying it's far from ideal, but, you know, books have been my sanctuary in this time. I'm sure they've been yours too, to some extent. So to feel that I might have done that for a few people, wherever in the world they might be as well, is, yeah, it's a lot that I'm grateful for too.
Yeah, they have been my sanctuary for sure. I'm debating if this is becoming some sort of a problem. I'm like, what is it with books? Like, what, maybe this is not healthy. I should probably, like, you know, get back into the real world. Somebody yesterday was saying to me, like, books allow you to, what did she say? Just, like, constantly be in other people's lives. And I'm like, it's not that I'm unhappy in my own life. Like, what does it mean to be such a huge reader? But I don't know. There's something about the magic of it that I find sort of irresistible. So
there's something so reassuring to seeing someone else's life reflecting problems in your own, even if it's not a one-for-one mapping. You know, you might be feeling anxious about, I don't know, say your kids starting a different school, and you read a book about someone who's having a completely different anxiety, you know, and there's something in the phrasing, there's something in a sentence, and it just clicks. I don't know, it's magic. It's absolute magic.
It's true. So it's true. Or at least I can forget about my own anxiety for a few minutes and deal with You know, your book got me thinking too, right? Mary, in her dedication for 7 years, is often like, what would I be willing to throw my whole life behind for 7 years? Like, what would happen? And would I ever get to a point where I would be handling it this way? Like, if this point of sort of desperation, like, what ends up meaning that much? Like, have you thought about this? Like, what would you do for 7 years? What's worth waiting? I mean, go ahead.
You know, that's such a good question. And I think when you have, like, for me, that question was felt so keenly that I could write the book. You know, I needed a question that, like, burned inside me. I think it must be incredibly hard. Through the research process of this, I've read a lot about missing persons. I listened to a lot of podcasts, particularly there's a series, UK-based, I think, just called Missing People, run in conjunction with one of the charities, where they interview friends, family of the missing person. And in some of the cases, we're talking like 20, 30 years on, and there's something, and this is something I explore in Anywhere For You, about the lack of closure, meaning that moving on is for many people simply impossible. And that's something Mary struggles with in the book, although obviously, you know, in a book you've got a finite space of time, so obviously there's going to be some closure there. But yeah, it must be incredibly hard. And yeah, that's like why the strap line on the front of the book still gets me thinking. It's like, how far would you go for someone you love, particularly someone that you promised the earth to? I don't know. I'm not a terribly patient person, but I am fiercely loyal. So I suppose there's kind of elements of me and Mary. And I suppose through her character, I was trying to figure out some of those contradictions in myself. Yeah, I like that she's got people thinking, whether they're like, whoa, I could never do that myself, or I can completely see how she got to that point because desperate people do desperate things. Yeah. Gets me thinking.
By the way that British people pronounce Mary is just the greatest. It reminds me of Downton Abbey with Lady Mary, but like the extra syllable or whatever, the extra, like the drawn out A. It's like, so I love it. I could just sit here listening to you talk about Mary all the time. There's another book recently I had on, Hannah Mary McKinnon is an author. It was a more of a thriller about a missing love interest. You should maybe check it out. I can send you a link afterwards, but it's her latest book, and the husband, not even husband, the paramour basically disappears, and the woman goes in search, and then they it's not 7 years. It was only a couple months until the rest of the drama sort of unfolds. But it was that same thing of like, you know, did this person drown? Is this person dead? Did this person live? Like, how do you go about like waking up and making yourself breakfast the next day with the whole ground beneath you so uncertain? I don't know. Anyway, it's just such an interesting question. So
that sounds brilliant. That sounds really good. I think one thing since writing the book that I've been thinking about a lot as well, and you can kind of see it in books and popular culture, is like this culture we now have of ghosting people. Start mm-hmm. seeing people and, you know, then they don't reply to your text, or, you know, they just disappear and maybe you've been seeing them for a few months, and how psychologically affecting that. If it wasn't so affecting, we wouldn't have such like a wealth of culture coming out about it. It feels like really prevalent. Like everyone has some experience, and some people are okay to be like, to kind of chalk that up to the way of life. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of people, probably more than who let on psychologically, you know, you obsess on it because your mind hooks on worst possible scenarios. That's just like the torment of, you know, the mind, really, regardless of the truth of it. So yeah, that sounds brilliant. I'm going to look that up. Yeah, I love that the theme can take you in so many different ways as well, you know, to a thriller, to a love story, to a kind of book club discussion. Yeah, it's really fascinating.
I said that my sister-in-law is sort of like in the dating world now after a very long time of being in a relationship. And, you know, she was showing me some texts with a guy, and she's like, yeah, but then, you know, then he just stopped. And I was like, is he okay? Maybe he's not okay. And she's like, no, this is what everyone does. And I was like, how do you know though? How do you know? Like, maybe you should just like send him a message and just be like, are you okay? And she's like, no, I'm pretty sure he liked a post in somebody else's feed or something. And I'm like, okay, fine. Anyway, so are you working on another novel now?
I am. I've definitely found writing in the pandemic quite tricky. I don't know if any other authors have told you that, but I kind of had a lot of ideas that I could not quite settle on. And I wonder if that was just like a symptom of all our minds kind of lily padding, leapfrogging from idea to idea. So, but finally I settled on something which myself and my agent are both very excited about. So I'm in the process of writing that. I'm super superstitious though when I'm writing. So I'm at that stage where I'm kind of don't want to breathe a word in case some of the magic kind of like
comes. No worries.
But it's going, and I'm tentatively hopeful that, you know, as things brighten up, so the writing's going to like kick in a bit faster too. So yeah, it's good. It's good in its own way.
And do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Yes, although I always feel like I want to caveat that by saying no one trusts me. I mean, it's the best advice, I think, is just to read widely. Try not to be scared of like authors who you perceive to be way better than you. I have that right now, just because, yeah, you always want to be inspired, right, to kind of aim up. So read widely, read everything, not just kind of in your genre, but in other genres, because you can learn, you know, I learn plotting from crime novels, detail from historical novelists. So read widely. And I suppose like not to get too hung up on waiting for the muse, because I think bum in the seat, typing words gets the book done. And yeah, thick skin. That's another big one, but you can't. It's just a learned thing, isn't it? You know? So those would probably be my top three tips to aspiring writers.
Excellent. Great. Okay. Can you just say Mary one more time?
Mary.
No, I love it. Mary. So great. All right. Well, thank you, Abby. Thanks for coming on. And yeah, congratulations on all of your success. And I can't wait to see what you write next.
Well, thank you so much, Libby. Thanks for having me on too.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at zibbyowens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.